We've been going through this series called Recovery Road. It's been a good, long 2 months, but we're finally here. We are at the last week of the series. And what I want to do before I get into it is I want to review the last 7 weeks, just the last seven steps to healing, seven steps to recovery. That's realize, earnestly, consciously, openly, voluntarily, evaluate, and reserving. And these are the full statements right here. Realize, I am not God. I admit I am powerless to control my tendency to do the wrong thing. Earnestly believe that God exists, that I matter to him, and that he has the power to help me recover. Consciously choose to commit all my life and will to Christ's care and control. Openly examine and confess my faults to myself, to God, and to someone I trust. Voluntarily submit to every change God wants me to make in my life. Evaluate all my relationships and reserve a daily time with God for self-examination, Bible reading, and prayer. Those are the seven steps, but if you are familiar with Celebrate Recovery at all, you know that they don't go like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. In fact, they don't see it as you have to do step one before you can get step two, and then step two to step three. They look at the program as more of components of healing. You get one, and then as you latch onto one of the components, you get to the other, and then get to the other. These aren't done in any particular order, but as you start to develop them, you eventually get all eight. And so here we are at the last letter, the last component of healing, last step to recovery. And what I'd like to share with you this morning about that is the story of a woman named Gomer. But I want to start that story with a question. And that question is this: what do you expect at a wedding? I got married a month from yesterday, and I've been in a few weddings in the last 2 years. In fact, I'm about to go to another wedding to be in a couple weeks. So I'm beginning to be very familiar with the process of having a wedding. I'm getting familiar with everything that takes place there. So what do you expect? Obviously, you expect there to be a groom. You expect there to be an exchanging of rings, an exchanging of vows. You expect it to take place in a beautiful venue for everyone to look nice, well-dressed. You expect there to be beautiful flowers. After the wedding, you expect there to be fun, celebration, food, dancing, everything. But the main thing that you expect, the most important thing of the whole day, is when the bride comes down. She walks down the aisle in her white, beautiful, pure wedding dress. That's the moment that everyone looks for on the wedding day. That's the moment that everyone remembers. That moment when she enters the room and she walks down is what everyone keeps in their mind. That is the most spectacular moment of the whole day. And this day was Gomer's wedding day. In fact, this was her wedding dress. And you might not be able to see it from where you're sitting, but if you were to stand and you were to come up here and look at it, you would realize it's not that great of a dress. In fact, there are some stains on it, especially right here. It's not well kept. It's in desperate need of a good cleaning. It's been well worn. But this was the dress that Gomer could afford, because frankly, Gomer didn't have a lot of money. And Gomer didn't really have a lot of family or a lot of friends that were willing to help her pay for a great, spectacular, beautiful, spotless wedding dress. Because Gomer was a prostitute. And when I say was, I don't mean she was a prostitute at some point in her life. No, she was very active in that occupation leading up to the wedding. And you might be really confused as to why a prostitute was getting married, but it will be even more confusing when I tell you who the groom was. See, the groom was a man named Hosea. And Hosea was a prophet of Yahweh, the one true living God. He spent his whole life being humble before God, going to where he sent him, preaching to Israel and to every person he saw. And Hosea never thought that he would be in this position. He never thought that the woman he would be marrying would be a prostitute. But that's the thing about God. God likes to tell people to do things they would never expect. God likes to have people go to where they never thought they would go. And so one day when Hosea was preaching, God said this to him: I want you to find a prostitute, and I want you to marry her. And it gets even crazier, because God says, I want you to marry a prostitute specifically so that some of her children will not be yours. And God wasn't talking about children before the marriage, he was talking about after. Hosea went into this knowing that the woman he was marrying was incredibly unfaithful before their marriage and would continue to be unfaithful. But Hosea was obedient to God. And so he found Gomer and he married her. And here they were on their wedding day. And it was a beautiful day. There weren't really many people that came, because neither of them really had much family or many friends. But the few that did enjoyed their time. And it was a good marriage for the first couple months. See, Gomer wasn't a prostitute out of necessity. It may have started like that, but she continued that occupation because she had desires, she had cravings, that she was doing everything she could to satisfy, to fulfill. And she never found satisfaction in that, so she kept craving, kept desiring. And it was only a few months into the marriage that those desires began to come back into her. She started to crave that kind of life, that promiscuous, adventurous life, going everywhere with anyone. And so it started out one evening for a couple of hours. She left the house. And then the next, what started out as once a month turned into a couple of times a month. And what turned into just a couple hours in an evening turned into entire nights. And then those couple times a month became once a week. And then those entire nights turned into entire days, or even multiple days before she would come back home. Gomer was unfaithful to Hosea repeatedly, time and time and time again. And Hosea knew this. The first time that Gomer left, he knew what was going on. He expected this. But even though he already knew that this would happen, didn't make it hurt any less. In fact, it broke Hosea. It pained him deeply. And so there was this marriage of two people who, in two very different ways, were broken, who were hurting, who were pained. And you see, Gomer, the wedding dress that she was wearing, the vows that she took, they weren't very pure at all. In fact, they were, at this point, incredibly stained. But even though Gomer was incredibly unfaithful to Hosea, even though she was going out night after night, betraying him constantly, Hosea would say the same thing to her every time she came home. And he would say this: I still love you. I love you. Just stay with me. Be faithful to me. But unfortunately, she didn't listen. She kept having these desires. She kept having these cravings that she was doing everything to fulfill, trying to seek out that satisfaction in every avenue possible. But it wouldn't come. Now see, God had told Hosea to marry this woman. As a real, as a visible, as a physical illustration of Israel's unfaithfulness to God. Because like Gomer was unfaithful to Hosea, Israel was unfaithful to God time and time and time again. God would save them. God would rescue them. He would give them everything they needed, everything they wanted. And then they would abandon God. They would leave. They would find idols or foreign gods to worship. They would worship anything that gave them an excuse to live immoral lives, to live the lives that they wanted to live. They sought out their cravings and desires in every avenue possible. But what they didn't realize is that they would never find real fulfillment. They would never find satisfaction in any of those avenues, because they would only find it in God. And God said, every time, I still love you. Come back to me. Just stay with me. Be faithful to me. That's all I want. I still love you, even though you've left me time and time and time again. But the problem with unfaithfulness, the problem with sin, whenever we break God's law, whenever we hurt each other, it creates pain, it creates brokenness. Every time one of us is unfaithful to God, one of us is unfaithful to each other in any way, it creates hurt. It creates some level of brokenness, not just within ourselves, but within our family and our friends. Unfaithfulness never just affects the person who's unfaithful, it affects everyone around them. And so even though God still loved Israel, they felt the consequences of their unfaithfulness. They felt the consequences of their sin. And they felt that pain, they felt that brokenness. Gomer felt that pain and brokenness, and she could never find what she was really looking for. Hosea felt that pain and brokenness as he would watch his wife leave his home to come back. He didn't know when, knowing that she would give herself to another lover time and time and time again. And as you might expect, Gomer became pregnant. And even though Hosea knew that this wasn't his child, Hosea said, I will love this child. I will raise this child as if it's my own. The only problem is Hosea couldn't actually name the baby because God already had a name picked out, and it wasn't a pretty one. God said this to Hosea in the first chapter of Hosea. He says, name the child Jezreel, for I'm about to punish King Jehu's dynasty to avenge the murders he committed. It wasn't only that Hosea's marriage to Gomer was a real and visible, physical illustration of Israel's unfaithfulness to God, but even the children and their names that they would bear were real illustrations of Israel's unfaithfulness to God. And then Gomer got pregnant again. And Hosea said the same thing. This child isn't mine. I'm going to love it. I'm going to raise it. I'm going to care for it. And God had another name picked out for the baby. And God said this in the first chapter, verse 6. He said, name your daughter Lo-Ruhamah, which means not loved. For I will no longer show love to the people of Israel or forgive them. That's possibly the worst name a human being could have. Not loved. And Gomer got pregnant again, and she had a third child, and it was the same deal. It was the same awful name. Each child was a real illustration of how Israel was unfaithful to God. And as their unfaithfulness continued to grow, so did the pain, so did the brokenness, the consequences of their actions continued to rise. And it was the same situation for Gomer. She would go out time and time and time again. And every time she would go out, she would be gone for longer and longer and longer, until there was a time where she left the home and she didn't come back. She was gone for over 2 weeks. And Hosea said something really similar to what God said. Hosea said, if she's going to do this, then she will no longer be my wife because she has chosen another lover. I will not show love to her anymore. But God, being the God who he is never content to just leave it at that. And even though he said that about Israel, and even though Hosea said that about Gomer, God said, no, I've got another plan. And so God said to Hosea, go find your wife. It was already incredibly shameful and embarrassing that everyone in the community, everyone in the town knew that Hosea's wife was incredibly unfaithful to him. But it was a whole new level of shame, a whole new level of embarrassment for Hosea to leave his home, to go to people and to ask them, have you seen my wife? Where is she? So he searched frantically for her. He had to leave his home a far distance, and he eventually found her. And he found her in the home of another man who was holding her captive. So Hosea went to the man, and he said, give me my wife back. And the man laughed in his face, and he said, no, no, she left you. She chose me. She's mine in every way. If you want her, you're going to have to pay for her. And so Hosea did probably the most embarrassing, the most shameful thing that a human being could do. He had to pay the price of a female slave to have his incredibly unfaithful wife back. And so he bought her, and he took her home, and he said the same thing. He told her every night when she would come home. He said, I still love you. Just stay with me. Just be faithful to me. That's all I want. And it was after this little adventure, it was in this moment where Gomer's heart finally broke. She finally realized that everything she had been searching after, everything she had been doing to fulfill these cravings, to fulfill these desires, were purely destructive. They only caused pain and brokenness, not only in her, but in Hosea, and even in her children. Every single member of that family felt an intense amount of hurt. Hosea felt betrayed time and time and time again. And even though it was incredible that he still loved her, it was an extreme amount of frustration to do so. Their children felt abandoned, betrayed, without a real mother. They would look around, they would see other children being cared by their mothers, and they didn't have that. Gomer felt empty. She felt destroyed. She felt in every way that she was completely unworthy of having any kind of real relationship with another human being. And she could not believe that Hosea, that this man, would still love her despite everything that she had done to him. But the problem with that, the problem with her not being able to believe that, is that there was so much evidence that he loved her. She couldn't ignore the evidence because he was there every single time. Every single time she would come back, he would say that same thing. He would say, "I still love you." And so, for the first time, Gomer stayed with Hosea. She did not betray him. She was not unfaithful to him. Often, we find ourselves in one of those positions. We find ourselves in the position of Gomer. We're stuck with a craving, we're stuck with a desire that we're doing everything we can to fulfill, but we're finding it in all the wrong places and in all the wrong ways. And in our pursuit to do so, in the pursuit of those habits or those addictions, we hurt ourselves and we hurt the people that care about us, or that we care about them. Oftentimes we find ourselves in the place of Hosea, where we desperately love someone and we just want everything good to happen to them. We want them to make every right decision, but they continue to hurt us and betray us. Oftentimes, we can find ourselves in the position of the children, betrayed by someone who's supposed to take care of us, betrayed by someone who's supposed to be there for us, who's supposed to love us, that we depend on. And so we're forced to live our lives without being able to be dependent on them. If we're really honest with ourselves, we probably can identify with more than one of those people. But here's the thing. Even though we are so often unfaithful to God, even though we are hurt by the people who love us, even though we create every kind of brokenness and pain in our lives, or other people cause pain and brokenness in our lives, God says the same thing that Hosea said to Gomer. We are often unfaithful to God. But despite everything that we've done, regardless of what's been done to us, regardless of how broken we feel, regardless of how unworthy we feel, despite how used we feel, God still loves us. And he will never stop loving us, because here's the thing, God's love isn't dependent upon us in any way. I mean, think about this. God's love isn't dependent upon your belief in it. God's love isn't dependent upon you following every single rule he has, because if that were the case, we would have been severely messed up a long time ago. There would be no hope. There would be nothing we could possibly do to receive that love. But God's love is his love. It's his to freely give to whomever he chooses. And when he gives that love, all he asks is that we stay with him, that we're faithful to him, that we love him in return. And even when we're unfaithful, even when we get hit by one of those habits or one of those hurts, by one of those hang-ups, even when we fall into a rut, even when someone wounds us deeply, even when we wound someone else deeply, God still loves us. He is relentless in showing us his love. And that brings us to the final letter of recovery, the final component of healing, the final step. And as Claire said earlier, it's yield. I have to yield myself to God to be used to bring the good news to others by both my example and my words. God loves you so much that he wants to heal every broken piece in you. And he doesn't just want that for you. He wants that for every single person around you. And the greatest thing about God is that sometimes he uses our strengths. Sometimes he uses the things that we're really good at. But oftentimes, he uses people in their weakest or most broken places to heal other people, to show his love to other people. And so God calls us to give everything to him, not just the things that we're good at, but to give him our story, to give him the worst pieces of us so that other people can feel his love too. He calls us to be faithful to him, and he calls us to share our story. Because for all of the love that he gives to us, he wants to give to everyone around us. And this just isn't a blanket application. This isn't something for you to go home and to figure out, how can I do this? First Church has real, tangible, and immediate places for you to share your story, for you to yield yourself to God to be used to bring the good news to other people. This entire series, Road to Recovery, is based on the program Celebrate Recovery. And that's a program that First Church wants to offer because we believe, that the community of Altoona desperately needs it. And the problem is, we cannot offer this program unless we have people stand up and volunteer. We have people who want to be committed to leading this. And we cannot do this unless we have people who stand up and say, I want to share my story because I want to see people who were in similar situations to me or the same situations as me to be healed too. We need people to share their story in that capacity. And if you feel God calling you to do that, go find Claire, go talk to her because she'd love to get your information. She would love to follow up with you. You can send an email to her or to Arlene. They would love to talk to you about that. But that's not the only way. This church is filled with young people who are growing up. This church is filled with high schoolers, with middle schoolers, with young adults, kids even in elementary school. And for some of us, those years in middle school or those years in high school are probably the worst years of our lives. And that's the case for these kids too. And they desperately need to see, they desperately need to hear adults who have gone through those same or similar situations. They need to see other people so that they know they're not alone. They need to see that they can heal from those situations. They need to understand that God loves them, regardless of anything that they've done or anything that's happened to them. And if you want to work in that capacity, you can talk to Mike, you can talk to Angela, you can talk to Connie. They'd love to get your information. They would love to follow up with you, to get you plugged in. Because this church, if this church wants to be a place of healing, if this church wants to be a place where people can come and be healed of their brokenness, then this church needs to be a place where people share their stories of brokenness. Celebrate Recovery puts this as a component of healing, as a step, because they don't think this is something you do once you've entirely healed from something. They see sharing your story as a process of healing. That's a part of healing. That isn't something you do when you're completely healed from something. No, that's one of the ways that you heal through your pain, through your hurts, through those habits or hang-ups. This needs to be a place of openness, where people can bear everything to each other, because we cannot go through this life alone. As the singers come up to sing our closing song, would you pray with me? Dear God, thank you just for this day, for this morning, that we can come here and we can worship you. We can love you. We can talk about you, pray to you, learn about you. I ask that you would continue to show us your love, that we would be able to feel it, regardless of any situation we have been in, regardless of any situation we're in now. I ask that you would be here, that you would be present this morning and in our lives. In your son's name, amen.